Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you one. Thank you all down here, up there, all around the world. Welcome to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. And ladies and gentlemen, as you can see right there, we couldn't put that up if it wasn't true. We are live tonight and... And so is Joe Biden. More importantly, we are awake. Thanks to our sponsor, Too Much Caffeine. Too Much Caffeine. We have the shakes. Now, coming into tonight's speech, critics said Biden's State of the Union challenge was to dispel old man vibes. Really? In Congress? Kind of hard to fight off the old man vibe when you're speaking to a room that looks like an open casket convention. Well, tonight, Joe Biden delivered what has been described in the press so far as feisty, fiery, heated, supreme, crunch wrap. I'm sorry. It's really late and I'm hungry. Leading up to the big speech, Biden hunkered down at Camp David with six of his closest advisors, including Mike Donilon, the aide who has the best understanding of Mr. Biden's voice. It's very important. His advisors have to understand his voice. Because it starts up here. And then he comes down here and tells you he's not joking. Not joking, folks. That's number one. Number two, he likes making lists of two things. It was kind of a tense night. Because it feels like this might be the last time we get a State of the Union. Depending on what happens in November, next year might just be a Kid Rock concert and an immigrant catapult. The media, I hope not, but that's not. The media spent the day trying to get any peek into Biden's state of mind. Politico got the huge scoop that the president had chicken parm for lunch. And then he spoke for an hour? When I have chicken parm, I clear my calendar for 24 hours, and I dim the lights. Now, I hear you out there. I hear you asking. You're saying, Steve, were there any thirsty-ass bitches in the audience? The answer is yes, because thanks to rules giving former members of Congress floor access, George Santos attended the State of the Union. Come on. You can't just go back to your old job like you never left. Unless you're Jon Stewart. Keep it up, John. You're crushing it. Now, on the Democratic side, they wore white. On the Republican side, they were white. Ahead of the president's arrival there, members of the Supreme Court filed in. Interestingly, Justice Clarence Thomas did not attend. Yeah, it's nice to know he's willing to recuse himself from something. Then, the big moment, the president's entrance. He took his sweet damn time getting down the aisle. And as the president made his way, the crowd chanted. Four more years of walking to the podium. Okay, it's late. Just go. Well, then he finally got to the podium where Speaker of the House Mike Johnson got the privilege of standing next to Vice President Kamala Harris. And because he was standing that close to a woman, his son got an alert on his phone. Don't know what, Jeff. I'm just saying. The president started off by invoking history.
In January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation.
And he said, hey, Joe. Joe talked about the war in Ukraine and introduced the latest member of the NATO alliance.
And today, we've made NATO stronger than ever. Just this morning, Sweden officially joined and their minister is here tonight.
Biden touted his economic record and struck an optimistic tone.
I came to office determined to get us through one of the toughest periods in the nation's history. We have. It doesn't make news, but news in 1,000 cities and towns, the American people are writing the greatest comeback story never told.
And in one city, one American wrote the greatest love story never told. It's called This Is Me Now. It features J-Lo working in something called a heart factory, and Post Malone and Jane Fonda play zodiac signs. I will not be taking questions at this time. But I have so many questions. Biden emphasized that he has faith in America.
I say to the American people, when America gets knocked down, we get back up.
Yes, we get knocked down, but we get up again. They're never going to keep us down. We need a whiskey drink. We take a vodka drink. We take a cider drink. We take a lager drink. Because this speech is very long and booze makes it more fun. We drank the lager drink. Biden took aim at high-priced prescription drugs.
Americans pay more for prescription drugs than anywhere in the world. It's wrong, and I'm ending it.
That is fantastic. They should definitely make it cheaper to buy whatever amphetamine they shaved on top of Joe's chicken porn before giving the speech. Then, Joe Biden addressed shrinkflation.
In fact, the snack companies think you won't notice if they change the size of the bag and put a hell of a lot fewer, same size bag, put fewer chips in it. No, I'm not joking. It's called shrinkflation.
Joe's right. For instance, Doritos hasn't changed their price, but the bags have gone from 9.76 ounces to 9.5 ounces, which translates to five fewer chips. Burn it all down! We will hunt you! Go! My Doritos. We will hunt you to the ends of Cool Ranch and have our flavor blasted vengeance. You have driven us Doritos Locos. There you go. Thank you, citizen. Everyone's mad about shrinkflation. Even Cookie Monster recently tweeted, "Me hate shrinkflation. Me cookies are getting smaller." It's true. It hits everyone on the street. Big Bird is now just Bird. That is why tonight, Biden touted a new task force to take on unfair and illegal corporate pricing, which means we'll finally get a crackdown on all the convenience stores selling Arizona tea for more than a dollar. It says 99 cents right on the can! Burn! Fun on a live show. Then Joe recalled a commercial that maybe exists.
You probably all saw that commercial on Snickers bars. You get charged the same amount, and you got about, I don't know, 10% fewer Snickers in it.
He's right. I cannot tell you how many times I've opened a Snickers bar, and there's only one Snickers bar in there. It's unacceptable. It's got to stop. Where's my pitchfork? Biden also took on our economic rival, China.
I've made sure that the most advanced American technologies can't be used in China.
You hear that, China? You will not be getting the KFC chizza. Staying on technology, Biden also gave a stern warning about AI.
Harness the promise of AI to protect us from peril. Ban AI voice impersonations and more.
Really? Ban AI voice impersonations? That's not what he said on the radio this afternoon. Jim, play it.
I love AI voice impersonations. Me, the real Joe Biden, who married Jill, lick ice cream, love train, choo-choo.
I think that's what he said. That's what I heard. I just heard it. Finally, it was time for Biden's closing remarks.
My lifetime has taught me to embrace freedom and democracy. A future based on core values that defined America: honesty, decency, dignity, equality, to respect everyone, to give everyone a fair shot, to give hate no safe harbor. Now, other people my age see it differently. The American story of resentment, revenge, and retribution, that's not me.
Yes, other people his age see a different story. It's called Yellowstone. They love that show. And he finished strong with an inspiring message about America's days ahead.
I see a future where defending democracy, you don't diminish it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose and protect our freedoms, not take them away. I see a future where the middle class finally has a fair shot, and the wealthy have to pay their fair share in taxes. I see a future where we save the planet from the climate crisis and our country from gun violence. Above all, I see a future for all Americans.
The last time an old man was telling us that passionately that he wanted to take us into the future, Marty McFly invented rock and roll. Get in Joe Biden's DeLorean, America. Great Scott! We got a great show for you tonight. And it's live. Live.
Coming up, John Dickerson.
Here's the thing about eating. We all have to do it, sometimes even a few times a day. But if you already have a lot on your plate that isn't food, like stuff to do, figuring out your meals can be stressful. By the time you get breakfast going, it could be lunchtime. And then what? Eat your breakfast for lunch? Is that allowed? Yes, you're a grown-up who can make their own choices. And whether that choice is eating breakfast for every meal or bending to society's construct of proper mealtimes, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals that can be ready in as little as 2 minutes. Tailored to your schedule and weird eating habits, you have the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your cool new breakfast-only lifestyle. You can even try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus, if that's what you're into for breakfast. Or any meal. You do you. Head to factormeals.com/lateshow50 and use code lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code lateshow50 at factormeals.com/lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Welcome back, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight is a brilliant journalist who serves as CBS News chief political analyst and the anchor of CBS News Primetime with John Dickerson. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Mr. John Dickerson. John, it's good to see you again. Always nice to chew the fat over these big political events with you. You know these things better than anybody out there. And you are specifically Mr. Presidency. You wrote the book, The Hardest Job in the World, about the presidency. The State of the Union is a unique presidential tool. It's also a spectacle and a ritual. Before we get into like the nuts and bolts of what, you know, Biden talked about tonight, why is this speech such a meaningful thing for the presidency, and why tonight was specifically a meaningful moment for Joe Biden and this presidential election year?
Well, it's meaningful because it's in the Constitution, so that gives it some weight.
Well, the speech isn't in the Constitution. Sure. Just a State of the Union should be sent from the president to Congress, right? He doesn't have to give the speech.
He's done his homework.
Yes.
Exactly right. And in fact, all right, we're going to go down that road.
So
you don't have to give the speech in person. Thomas Jefferson said, you know what? It smacks too much of the monarchy. Why does that matter? So he didn't give it in person. He wrote it. He also thought it was kind of a hassle to walk over there. But this is important. This is, no, seriously, that's what he wrote in his letters. But this is what's really interesting to me is when you look at that, and then Woodrow Wilson brought it back, doing it in person. And then LBJ figured out he knew how to put on a show, and so he made it into a theatrical moment. Former president is arguing that he should have total immunity in the office. This speech that Thomas Jefferson said looked too much like the monarchy, so I don't want to give it in person. That's the way the founders thought about the office. It shouldn't look anything like a monarchy. So the idea that a president would have total immunity in an office that Thomas Jefferson thought would look too much like a king if you spoke before Congress. That gives you a sense of the distance between what a claim of total immunity is and the way the founders thought about the job in the beginning.
So, well framed. Well framed, Mr. Dickerson.
I didn't realize we were going down that road so
fast. No, I'm going all the roads with you. Okay, but so now why for Joe Biden in this election year was this an important moment?
Well, it's an important moment. Look, ringed around the Capitol, where Joe Biden had gone to so many previous State of the Unions, were 8-foot-high black fences as a result of the attack on January 6th. This speech given in that place, in that marble hall that was attacked on January 6th, 2021, started his presidency. I mean, it didn't exactly. He wasn't inaugurated yet, but it started this period of time that we are in. So every ritual of democracy that takes place in a healthy fashion re-knits those bonds that were torn up on the 6th. And he was there to remind people that that happened and that those stakes are still real. I mean,
he talked about a lot of stakes. He came in really hot tonight. He started off with FDR in 1941. What's the purpose there?
If you were going to set the stakes for a political moment, you can't set them any higher than 1941 fighting before World War II. So he set them immediately. He started in fifth gear.
And he drives a Corvette.
Right. So he knows.
he knows how to do that. Yeah.
He knows fifth gear. The only other historical moment that you would pick that has equal weight is the Civil War. And he name checked that, too. And why? He is calling on the ghosts of January 6th, which aren't even ghosts. There are people in that room there who helped that happen.
Including Mike Johnson over his shoulder, who was the one trying to get the fake electors allowed.
And one of America's leading political parties in a democracy has just nominated or is going to nominate in a democracy to be their candidate, someone who has worked actively to undermine democracy. So that's real. That's happening. That's what this election is right now. That's not, I mean, if you look at what was said by the leaders of the Republican Party about Donald Trump's role in January 6th, they said he was responsible for it. That he, as Mitch McConnell said in the past, he fed the mob lies. That it was a disgraceful dereliction of duty. That's now who is Joe Biden's opponent. And so it is perfectly reasonable to raise the greatest attack on democracy at that building since 1814.
Now, just as long as you brought up the name, I wasn't going to bring up Mitch McConnell, but he said all those things about Trump, and then he endorsed him this week. Yeah. For even someone like you who has covered Washington for so many years, did that surprise you?
Well, that's no fair, because we've never had an attack on the Capitol by the supporters of a candidate before. So I'm not being funny. I sound like Biden, don't I? In all seriousness. But but we've never had that situation. So what strikes me is when McConnell spoke out against Trump, and he did it several times after the attacks January 6th, he said that he was morally responsible for the attack. He said that it was a dereliction of duty, disgracefully, said the word twice. What was striking about that moment is there were many Republicans who didn't say boo. They might have been scared of retribution from Trump's supporters. They might have just not had a conscience. But McConnell broke with his party and his president. And that's a big deal. A lot of people in his party didn't. And when George Washington left office, he said, you know, I'm really worried about political parties, because what will happen is people will care more about their faction, about their political party, than they will the country. And so you don't want to have political parties have such amazing power. So Mitch McConnell broke with that. But then in supporting Donald Trump, who he said had a disgraceful dereliction of duty, he has unwound that. And so he's now picking his party over what he had done previously, which was to make a moral case about something that went beyond party, but that was an attack on the country.
Well, I want to get into next very specific things that Biden talked about and some of the things that he has both promised and talked about needing legislation on. We have to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more. John Dickerson.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Okay, John, you are a wordsmith yourself. You've given quite a few speeches in your time. I just listened to your one at the Kennedy School at the Shorenstein Center up at Harvard. But what do you think of the language that Biden was using tonight? Do you see any patterns in what he was doing?
Well, the first thing was how vibrant he was in everything. I
think. Every sentence had an exclamation mark at the end of it.
Right, exactly. It was like he was going to have an altar call and start healing people. But yes.
Raphael Warnock called it a sermon.
Did he?
Yeah.
So what struck me, well, first of all, was the number of my predecessor. Never said
Trump's name.
Never said his name, which, is the thing politicians do. They always talk about my opponent this.
Right. How many times did he say my predecessor?
13 in the text. I don't know how many he actually said. He might have said more than that.
Because he went off book a bunch.
He did. And you can imagine his aides, right? When he goes off book.
Yes.
I mean, it's a bear on roller skates.
We don't know if the corn pop story is coming out next.
Right. Yep. That struck me, my predecessor. I can't remember a State of the Union where the president went after his predecessor so much. But then I counted up the word fair because there's that section. So that's the political. We talked about why he was talking about this and the echoes in the room. But then as a policy matter, the word fair also shows up 13 times. Why is that important? Or it's interesting to me, which is he's talking about increasing teacher pay. He's talking about helping people with housing. He's talking about college loans. He's talking about lowering drug costs. How's he going to pay for all of it? By taxing corporations and the very wealthy. So this is a populist message.
It's fair that you get this better deal. It's fair that they pay their fair share.
Precisely.
Okay.
Right. And
so
and,
I should run.
Yeah, exactly. Great. You should run. You have a good audience. You have both sides of the aisle. But Truman's fair deal was announced. I don't know if this was an echo for them, but it was in his 1949 State of the Union speech. So that idea of a fairness, fair shot. And why is he doing this? Of course, because his numbers are terrible on the economy. And instead of a debate about people's feelings about what they might recall from the Trump years, he wants to shift the turf to a new debate, which is what we should be talking about. What is the next president going to do in the economy to improve American opportunity and the rest of it? What's going to happen in the future and who's got the better vision? And he's happy to do that because he doesn't want to talk about the way people feel about the economy now.
Okay, one of the things that he did was that he seemed to be responding to the 100,000 uncommitted votes that were in Michigan and also some in Minnesota and elsewhere around the United States. And he announced a temporary seaport for Gaza, and he talked about the airdrops of humanitarian aid, getting a lot of humanitarian aid and calling on Israel to open up the northern gates of Gaza. How big a deal is it that he is changing his messaging there?
Well, so normally about 500 trucks a day of aid go into Gaza. It's at 100 now. The UN says 570,000 adults in Gaza are severely malnourished and close, on their way to starving. And what's extraordinary is that he's basically going around Israel to get with this seaport, as he has with the airdrop. But what's the political implications, as you mentioned? The uncommitted vote sent him a clear signal, and they are responding. First, rhetorically, you heard them change the way they talked about a ceasefire. They started making what was just a pause into a ceasefire. Usually when you talk about ceasefire, you mean stop it altogether. But they're changing the language and now changing policy in response to that. And we were talking earlier about when you don't get your way as a political supporter, what do you do? Do you go for violence or do you act through the democratic process? And to me, this is the system working. A bunch of Democrats said, we don't like this policy, and we're going to show you, maybe by voting you out or making your life miserable, so you can change the policy. Now, he doesn't have to bend the knee. He can say, you can vote me out if you want. I don't agree with you. But he listened to them, apparently. And that's the way it kind of should work in a democracy.
What's kind of interesting is, of all the things... Go a little bit more here. Of all the things that Mike Johnson did not stand up to applaud, it was a call for no political violence from Biden, and the Republicans did not stand up to applaud a call for no political violence.
Yeah, that whole side of the room looked, I'm not usually one who gets, I feel like you shouldn't watch the audience because then it'll just only encourage them to do more of this pantomime. But I noticed the same thing you did, which is they didn't stand at all when that's a pretty obvious thing you stand for is no political violence.
It's a low bar.
It is a low bar because you are a member of Congress to work in an institution that was created so you don't have violence. So you work out your toughest, meanest arguments in a system where you adjudicate them and everybody decides it was a fair deal. So we're not going to go have a violent insurrection or anything else. You should probably clap for that.
We have to take another break here, but stick around. We'll be right back with more Mr. John Dickerson, everybody.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
The author of the book, The Hardest Job in the World, Mr. John Dickerson of CBS News. John, the general election feels like it really began tonight. This was the starting gun. Biden went up there and framed his opponent in a certain way and said, these are the things that are challenging in America, but framed his opponent as one of those great challenges for America. You recently gave a speech at Harvard that argued that press coverage of presidential campaigns is, quote, too distant from the office of the presidency. What do you mean by that?
I mean, what does the job require? What does it mean day to day? And that means two things. What does it mean in terms of the attributes of the person in the office? What do they need? What does character mean? What does temperament mean? What does restraint mean? What are the component qualities you need to be a good president? And then what do they do all day? And let's reverse engineer the way we talk about campaigns by looking at what they actually do, instead of the way we talk about the presidency and campaigns, which is as some superhero office where, with a stirring tweet, you can fix an incredibly complex problem. So it's whenever we get lost in the polls or in the shiny object of the moment, just keep thinking, no, actually, what is this person going to be like in the office, and what are the presidential questions in this moment, and just stay focused on the office.
What do they do all day?
You know what they mostly deal, and this is one of the ways you can do it. They deal with foreign policy. They deal with national security. They deal with secrets we don't know anything about. They deal with the terror, real fear that there's going to be a cyber attack on infrastructure. Stuff they can't even talk about out loud because it would freak everybody out. But in the campaigns, we don't talk about that stuff much. You know, we talk about, well, all kinds of crazy things. They spend most of their day on the phone with foreign leaders. You know, tied down with foreign policy because, as Kennedy said, domestic policy can get us unelected. Foreign policy can get us killed.
We have heard Joe Biden's take on the State of Our Union. Let's get John Dickerson's State of Our Union. And I'll frame it in this way. After Donald Trump went out in 2020 and said, no, I won. This is all a fraud. And they stopped counting ballots. You talked about burning the Democratic furniture. And that how he is burning the Democratic furniture, and it's up to his allies in the Republican Party to stop him from doing that, because there'll be a price to be paid. How is the state of burning our Democratic furniture right now?
Well, yeah, and the idea was if he says this, there's going to be... But what burning Democratic furniture meant is violence. There will be, and that's what we had. I think the fact that they have renominated somebody who continues to believe, falsely, obviously, it's a lie, that he won in 2020... That is putting all the same negative energy, a lot of like gasoline on the floor. So the danger is there. What's good about the Democratic furniture is that people held the line and the last election, it happened, and a peaceful transfer of power happened. But all those same threats are alive again because the nominee of the party continues to hold those beliefs. And that violence is still out there. And lawmakers get threatened. And so we're still in a very tense moment.
Give the speech a grade?
I'm going to treat that as a rhetorical question.
Thank you, John. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements, hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game. Headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.